D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the BZB Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen joined on our phone line by a man who needs no introduction, of course. It's George Plaster joining us on the program. And, George, we've been talking about Barry Trotz in the first hour of the program. I threw out the question on a scale from 1 to 5, 5 being the highest. How confident are you that Barry Trotz can return the team to Stanley Cup contender status? I'm curious for your opinion on Trotz's performance as Predators GM, knowing how far back you go with Trotz. So when you evaluate Trotz's performance in this new role, new-ish role, how would you grade him?
Well, first, let me say up front, like everybody else that's ever dealt with him, Barry Trotz is one of the all-time good human beings that God ever put on this earth. And so I don't think there's one of us who covered him back then who doesn't want him to succeed now. That doesn't answer your question. What will answer your question is, I'm really confused. I don't really know where he's headed with anything. At times he talks about a plan. I'll admit, I don't know what the plan is. I see the trade a week ago for Eric Halla, and I just kind of say, what's that about? Is that really what's going to get the Predators back toward playoff contention? I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think so. I admire on one hand Barry Trotz's loyalty to Andrew Brunette. On the other, let's cut the crap. That team quit on him two or three times near the end of the season, and that's unacceptable. And I don't know that that really got factored into all of this the way it should have. He might end up being right that Andrew Brunette is the answer, but I don't think he's got a very long leash to pull this off. And if in October and November this team looks the way it did last year, Andrew Brunette's going to be gone whether Barry Trotz likes it or not, because somebody above him is going to force the issue.
So, George, I think a lot of people feel exactly how you feel about it. And we're kind of looking at the 2 years because we're looking back on what would you have done differently. And after that first year where they kind of overachieved, I think he had the hot hand, and it looked like everything he was doing was working, and so that probably emboldened him to take, as he likes to say, the big swings. So I think there's a learning curve, and we were talking about this. There's very few GMs in the NHL that were coaches at one time or another, let alone being a coach for as long as Barry Trotz. He might make the Hall of Fame as a coach just because he's in the top 10 of wins all time, and he's got a cup. But a great coach doesn't necessarily make a GM, even though it certainly shapes your thinking.
Yeah, and look, I don't know. I don't pretend to know what's going on. I have my own theories. I think that people end up in Andrew Brunette's doghouse from time to time and get shipped out of here, when in fact, maybe they shouldn't have gotten shipped out of here. I'm guessing the Halla deal, based on past history with Andrew Brunette, that he's perhaps influenced. Something good needs to happen soon. And when I say soon, I think I'm talking about this weekend. Number one, they need to draft well, but I also think they need to do something in the trade market that gives the fan base true reason to believe that next year will not look like this past year. Because the fact of the matter is, this team was eliminated before Thanksgiving, and you can't sell tickets when that's the deal. And I don't think this franchise can afford much more of out of contention before Thanksgiving.
Now, we had a caller call in, George, and he talked briefly about, you know, possibly there's too much, what was expansion blood.
Expansion era blood.
Yeah, blood in this, in with this organization.
Trotz,
he talks about Trotz,
Brunel,
Poyle, guys that are still somehow, some way connected with this organization.
The family.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I don't see that as a, and he posed it as possibly a problem. I didn't see it quite as a problem. How do you see it, if you even noticed it at all?
I think you could throw, if you want to really dig down deep, too, the director of scouting, Jeff Kilty, was a guy that was cut off the first roster, right? Mm-hmm. He tried out. He's been with the organization for
Scott
a long
Nickel.
Time.
Mm-hmm.
Scotty Nickel, who's been a lot of different places, but he's, I think he would be a guy that's pretty deep-rooted. Brian Poyle has been there a lot. So that, I think it's an interesting thing, George, where can you have too much of people in the family? Because they just brought in an assistant coach, right? This is part of the discussion. They brought an outsider in, Luke Richardson, and we'll see how that happens because he's got no ties to any of the Predators before.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I guess maybe I haven't thought it through on the whole. Is there too much expansion blood still in this thing? To me, Derek, the bottom line was you had three free agent signings that a lot of people got excited about. And by the way, I'm at the head of the class of a year ago right about now being really excited. Stamkos, after an initial kind of feeling out process, Willie, would it be fair to say he had a decent year? But certainly not a superstar year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think you're being pretty kind to say decent. he was okay. It wasn't – it's the same thing with Marchessault. Same thing with Shea. Underwhelming, not horrendous, but, you know, it took a long time, and it didn't equate to anything in terms of winning.
Okay, and yet I would give him a way better grade than Brady Shea.
Yes.
I can't figure out what it is he brought to the table.
Fair.
And while we're on, you know, two out of three here, Marchessault, I think it'd be fair to say, is high maintenance. And Barry had to know that before he signed him. Because it's one of the things that I think Barry Trotz despises is the popping off at the end of the season. And yet, you know, as a media person, you're thrilled when somebody does it because it allows for talk and all that kind of stuff. What I'm curious about is what Marchessault said true? You know, I mean, it's a fair question when a team performs as poorly as this one did. The most disheartening thing to me was when they had the 5-game winning streak, they then follow it up by kind of going in the tank. And, you know, I guess I'm mystified that Andrew Brunette, you know, because coaches have to push certain buttons at times in a season to make things go right. And whatever buttons he pushed, none of them worked.
I think we'll find out very quickly whether that was true or not, because the season isn't going well. If that hook is very quickly, then there may have been possibly some truth to it, because if they're not doing well, the guys are going to check out very quickly, and we're going to notice it. But with that being said, do you think bringing on a Luke Richardson is a guy, and we talked about this, a guy that's an outsider that can come in and sort of, you know, have this presence for Marchessault that maybe Brunette doesn't have the temperament really to sort of deal with that type of player, but he does.
Well, if Andrew Brunette doesn't have the temperament, then he doesn't need to be in coaching. I mean, I'm sorry, when you have 21 or 25, you know, if it's baseball, or whatever, they're not all going to be, you know, peaches and cream.
Yeah, but some, but you see some coaches
the
doing
quote
that,
unquote,
like
players.
Yeah,
coach,
you
right?
see some coaches. It happens in football, you know, where you have your head coach, but then there's that other coach that sort of like he can connect with certain guys. He can, like we had it with Walsh was the defensive line coach. He could connect with those guys, and it was a little bit different from how Coach right. Fisher connected with them.
The Jim Washburn would be the Rick Callahan. Yeah. Type, right? There's good cop. There's balances. There's different personalities, mm-hmm. right? There's the good cop, bad cop.
I've referred to Luke Richardson as the Sipowicz of the yeah. Nashville Predators.
Right. I don't
staff.
Know if George watched NYPD Blue.
No?
I don't know. Did you watch that show, George?
Willie, at this very moment, I'm watching Friends.
That answers your question.
Okay.
So I can tell you that.
But you've seen a lot of coaching staffs, right? You know coaching staffs. How you need the good cop, bad cop element, right?
Yeah, I mean, why are we having to have that discussion in year three?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
If Andrew Burnett isn't capable on his own, then he needed to be smart enough at the beginning to hire that person. Telling me that we're bringing this guy on in year three, I mean, it's a year and a half too late.
Well, the first year went well. That mm-hmm. was that's what I would say. And you probably didn't go into last year thinking that that was a big issue.
Exactly.
But now you definitely do.
Here's what has to happen. If we cut through all the BS, that team tuned Andrew Burnett out a year ago. I don't know when, I don't know why, and I don't know how. I just know they did. And I know that at the end of the season, they quit on him any number of times. The most obvious being that debacle in Chicago, which should have had everybody's antennas going, you know, to DEFCON 5. This franchise can't operate like that. This is a deal. This is never going to be a major market. And, you know, they've got to win on effort. And there was nothing about last year's team that's really likable. I you know, it's hard to find a quality about last year's team that you go, man, I loved that team.
Right,
they showed unbelievable grit.
Yeah. It was the most frustrating season that they've ever had. There's no question.
It's like saying you love the Braves bullpen.
Well, the Braves bullpen has done pretty well
against
the Mets.
Speaking of the Braves, George, before we let you go, I know that it did not end up well on your end yesterday, as Willie's Mets did win a game against
Finally.
The Braves for once. But I thought with Willie wearing his Braves hat today, I wanted to give you an opportunity
not
to
wearing a Braves hat.
Oh, sorry, a Mets hat.
Yeah.
Sorry,
slip
a Mets
tongue.
Hat. Slip
yeah.
of the tongue. I wanted to give you an opportunity to razz on Willie if you'd like to.
No, but what Willie really was able to pounce on is something that's going on there. With Chris Sale's injury, they've trotted out a 20-year-old kid who has no business pitching on the major league level right now. Shame on Alex Anthopoulos for bringing him up and subjecting him to the beating he took last night. How does that help that kid? Go out and find some bag of bones out there and call him the fifth starter and be done with it.
You're saying they needed a Rick Mailer to come in just to sort of stem the tide.
Yeah. You remember, Willie, when I went on the deal about Royce Ring?
Yes. Oh, yes.
This was a relief pitcher that had about a 9.5.
He was the basic lefty who's still in the league because he's a lefty and not much else.
I went off on that. So let me ask you this, Willie, because you've been around all this. Where do you think I'm right and where do you think I'm wrong?
It's such a long season. I feel like in the last few years, I think the first one I think about is the Nationals, and Adam followed that team pretty much. But they were awful on Memorial Day. I think
I'm talking about the Preds.
Oh, you're talking about the Preds. I thought we were talking about Braves and where they are right now. Because the Braves are where the Mets were about a year ago, and the Mets turned it around. The Braves had a huge turnaround a couple years the year before that, right, where they went shooting past the Mets, who were off to a big lead, and we're all wondering if they could do it again. But for the Preds part of it, George, I think Barry Trotz is trying his best to keep the plane on course, right? And he is saying that, yes, even though we've changed directions a little bit, my end destination is the same. He hasn't traded future assets, and he's trying to thread a needle, which is tough, which is let's try to be competitive and make the playoffs now while we wait for some of these guys that they've drafted the last couple of years to mature. And what's really hard is, unlike football, you don't get an immediate return on your drafts, right? It takes a long time. Now, even the fifth pick on Friday, we certainly hope turns into a special player, but next year, that guy is not likely to help them at all, right? So we're not going to know for a couple of years of whether this plan is really going to work. And this year could go bad, and he might have to, again, on January 1st, decide, okay, let's start in the mode of what do we do to get some return on some of these guys who have expiring contracts, and we'll just have to live with the fact that this isn't going to happen, and maybe you pick high again. That could happen. That could happen again.
Okay, one of the most demoralizing things about them right now is that none of the young guys have made a breakthrough. So you tell me, who do you think is the most likely to be the first to make a breakthrough?
It's a really good question. I think there are three candidates at forward: Zach LaRue, Fedor Svechkov, and if you consider Luke Evangelista still a guy that is on, I think this is the last year he really has where you can say, does he still have something more to offer? Those are the three guys that I think they're going to say will go into the season with jobs. Everybody else is still, I think, a year away. They're going to get call-ups. He said with Kemmel, some of these other guys who were drafted in the first round. So it's possible, and I think Justin Barron, the young defenseman, Adam Willsby, those are two guys that I don't think have huge high ceilings, but they could turn into good players. I think it's conceivable they don't get anybody who makes that huge jump to be what the one you always bring up, Adam, is Wyatt Johnston, right? A guy that sort of shot up, and suddenly you've got a guy that is a huge player. The Predators haven't had a whole lot of guys like that since Roman Josi and Shea Weber and guys like that, and it's been a while.
Is that a scouting issue?
I think that's fair that they haven't they've had a hole there in drafts of not being able to draft that special guy since Soros and Josi. Well, those are the last two guys, right? Because they didn't draft Philip Forsberg. They traded for Philip Forsberg when he was still very young. He's obviously a needle mover.
George Plaster, of course. You can catch him on the George Plaster program from 3 to 5 p.m. on our sister station. George, always a pleasure, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Look forward to it. Chandler Bing sends you all his best.
Thank you, George. I'm actually kind of surprised that Plaster wasn't familiar with NYPD Blue.
Yeah, not too many people. I mean, I'm sure they have a huge following.
That show wasn't on that many seasons, right? That was a...
Let's see when NYPD
Blue
was on.
It was big when it came up, but then how many years did it have?
It was on for 12 seasons, 261 episodes.
Good grief. I would not have guessed that.
That means you didn't watch it a lot.
No, I didn't. Right. I didn't.
Quickly, before...
ER, that was one
Hill Street
I watched for a long time.
Yes. I love Hill Street Blues.
Oh, that's a good one, yeah.
So I just want to read a couple of texts on our Trotz from 1 to 5 before we go to break here. One texter says, I love Trotz the coach in person. Trotz the GM, 2 out of 5. Last summer's free agent pieces were a huge miss. Fit matters. Getting aging snipers is pointless with no one to get them the puck. BS plays a much different game. Brady Shea plays a much different game than Ryan McDonagh, yet was billed as his replacement. Putting two left-handed Ds as the top pair was a train wreck. We need centers and right D, yet Trotz gave those young pieces away last year. Fabro was a top free agent this year. It's just bad asset management. The Juice deal was way too long. There's good data showing small athletic goalies don't age as well. I love Barry Trotz, but the last year plus was amateur hour. Let's see.
The fit, I think, is a key thing. I think that is where it's the most fair criticism. It's not taking the swings. It's how did the pieces fit? And now you're in a, can Andrew Burnett adjust and make the pieces fit better? When Barry Trotz is responsible for supplying the pieces, right?
One more text from an unnamed texter. I'd give Trotz a 3.5 out of 5. Had it still been David Poile who made the same moves, I'd probably be at 1.5.
Oh, wow.
Poile had too much of a history of swinging for the fence and ending up pooping his pants. Let's just put it to you that way. It was a little bit more vulgar than that. 615-737-1025. We will get back to this. We'll take your reaction to it all show long. Scale of 1 to 5, your confidence in Barry Trotz being able to get the Predators back to Stanley Cup contender status with the NHL draft and free agency right around the corner. 615-737-1025. But coming up next, we had a texter earlier ask about Roman Josi. It is a big question about the Predators. If they want to be competitive next season, as Barry Trotz says, a lot of it rides on the health of Roman Josi. We will discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Get out of the summer heat for craft brews, food, games, and entertainment at the 2025 Nashville Predators Craft Beer Festival this Saturday at Bridgestone Arena. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/events.
Barry, I know the team put out something recently on Roman and his condition. I'm just curious how confident you are in what you've heard, and is that something you're having to plan toward that maybe you weren't aware of until fairly recently?
Yeah, when we found that out last year with Roman, we jumped on that pretty quick. We got him out to a specialist. He's been working with it. He's had good success with the treatment to this point. I've been told by the doctors and my medical team that he's trended very well and it should be ready to go, and is looking forward to not having to have the effects of it as much as he did maybe last year. And if he can get back to the level of Katie Ledecky, I mean, she's done pretty good having the same sort of situation. It doesn't mean that Roman can't have the success that we're used to Roman having. And in Roman's case, I think in some ways you're going to get a healthier Roman, not only physically because he's had some time off, but also mentally with getting this off his plate and the effects of it. So I'm hoping that Jost has a really good bounce back season for us.
That was Barry Trotz the other day talking about Roman Josi. One texter answering our question about Barry Trotz on a scale of 1 to 5. G from Murfreesboro, part of his response was, also having our top defenseman with so many concussions, I just don't see him helping going forward. It's human nature. He will protect himself. His family will be on him to protect himself. This team is going to be left behind from the top NHL teams with speed. 2 out of 5. But let's focus on Roman Josi. So, in case you missed it, Roman Josi was diagnosed with POTS, which is postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. And according to the Cleveland Clinic, it is a condition that causes a number of symptoms when you transition from lying down to standing up, such as a fast heart rate, dizziness, and fatigue. Roman Josi has a history of head injuries. His season was ended in late February because of a head injury suffered on a hit from Sam Bennett. And with Trotz talking about wanting to be competitive next season, a lot of that hinges on the health of Roman Josi. Now, the Predators have said that Josi is progressing exceptionally well. Those were their words. And that he is expected to be ready for the start of the season. But I am wondering, as an older player, 35, with a history of head injuries, with this condition, if we should expect a, for lack of a better term, diminished Roman Josi. I'm not talking significantly diminished, but a Roman Josi who is not the Roman Josi that we have come to know in Nashville over the past decade plus.
To me, I think this is probably not being discussed as much as it probably is going to be. I think in training camp, this might end up being something that we're watching each day because it's a critical question. I think we can start with, if the Predators don't get a really good year from Roman Josi. Forget about winning the Norris, but just a good Roman Josi year. Can they be anything close to a bounce-back team? I would say probably not. It would be miraculous if he doesn't play well or is injured that they could be good. He is that important to them. UC Saros, Philip Forsberg, and Roman Josi, in some order, are their three most important players, and I think Josi is not number three, right? He's either one or two. He has finished in the top 14 in the Norris Trophy voting all but 2 years since 2014-15, which was the first year that Peter Laviolette came in, which is where Roman Josi took off. That's his career. He was already laying the groundwork, but that was his age 24 season. You knew he was going to be good. He took a huge jump. The only 2 years he didn't finish in the top 14 are the 2 years that they missed the playoffs, which were last year and then 2 years ago. Both years, his season ended by getting concussed, right? So he's 35. So if there were no concussion issues or POTS issues, you'd still ask the question, these last 3 years of his contract, what's he going to give you? He's aged really well. I thought something that was very interesting in that quote from Barry Trotz that he slipped in there was he sort of intimated that this was bothering him before the hit by Bennett. Because if you look, he wasn't having a Roman Josi season before, nothing close to it, before Bennett ended his season. He was struggling. And so was he struggling with some of this? And how much of just studying it, right, and understanding the diagnosis and the treatment could help? Because that's another thing that I heard, I think, in Barry Trotz's answer that they're hopeful of, is that they've got a handle on it now. They've studied it. They've sent him to the experts. And this will allow him a better chance because he's not going to fade into the sunset because physically he's lost the gifts. He's kept himself in really good shape other than this issue he's having, which is a big issue.
And Derek, Barry Trotz mentioned in that clip, Katie Ledecky, the highly decorated Olympic swimmer, 9 gold medals. And she was diagnosed with POTS in 2015. She wrote in her memoir, which I believe was released last year, by the way, a 28-year-old writing a memoir, that shows you've made it when you're writing a memoir before the age of 30. She wrote, quote, about POTS. I pool blood in the vessels below my heart when I stand. My body then releases extra norepinephrine or epinephrine, which adds additional stressors on my heart, making it beat faster, which in turn brings on dizziness, fainting, and exhaustion. And she was able to manage those symptoms because she won 8 of her 9 gold medals after her diagnosis. So Katie Ledecky, of course, younger than Roman Josi. She's under 30 years old, swimming, hockey, different sports. But Ledecky has shown that an athlete can continue to be highly successful even when dealing with this condition.
Yes, because I think once you identify what it is, you can better treat it moving forward if there is a treatment for. And in this case, there is, I guess it's all about, maybe this was a part of Roman Josi, like you said, Willie, the season that he had coupled with the injury. Maybe this was something they were trying to figure out. He didn't know what was going on. And then obviously after the season, they figure it out. And, he probably thought like, man, no wonder my season wasn't going well, or no wonder I felt this way. I think a lot of times it's about management, and good thing Ledecky as well as Roman Josi are, in circles where they can get and I've said this before, everybody should be able to get the proper treatment or the best doctors. But in this case, it's like you have the best doctors, you have all the resources, especially in Roman Josi's case, you got all the resources. You're in a town that hospitals, some great hospitals around here, great doctors. So they can jump on it very quickly and put together a plan on, how you proceed during the season. Now, what may affect it is the minutes he plays and consecutive games
he can play or cannot play. Can he carry them the way he has?
Because
you would have this question even without this situation. And the other nature of the game, mm-hmm. just like in football, is another cheap shot by yep. a weasel like Bennett. He's a good talented
weasel. A Conn Smythe Trophy winning weasel.
Yes.
Got to add that.
Yes.
But that hit, if you watch it over and over, will anger you every time because mm-hmm. it was avoidable. He wasn't suspended or anything. It was awful that type of hit happened. It's affecting Yosi's, you know, outlook going forward here. But I think you're doing everything you can to see if you can get another great stretch of hockey. But I think it is something that you've got to be sort of projecting out in Jared's thing. I'm going to give the priorities of this year and 2 or 3 years down the road. 2 or 3 years down the road, Roman Josi, A, is going to be at the end of his contract, and B, he's not likely to be able to carry you. Mm-hmm. You're hoping maybe he has one more great season in him, but it's fair to ask how much can be expected of him with all of this at age 35.
615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts on Roman Josi. Before we get to Elliot Freeman at 1 o'clock, if you thought that I wasn't going to shoehorn a Cooper Flagg segment into this program, you thought wrong. And we will do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game.
He makes winning plays in every aspect of the game. This is the moment that Newport is waiting for. This has been the moment that Dallas is waiting for. The pick is officially in. Let's send it back to the podium and Commissioner Adam Silver.
With the first pick in the 2025 NBA Draft, the Dallas Mavericks select Cooper Flagg from Duke University.
So Matthew in Nashville, who texted in, he says, Dallas is not winning the title in Cooper Flagg's first year, Adam. That's not what this segment is about. Though I was very happy for Cooper Flagg. By the way, all of the Flagg jerseys and Flagg shirts are sold out already on the Dallas Mavericks team store website.
So. I'm going to argue they can.
Well, you can certainly do that. But there's been a lot of bellyaching about the NBA, the ratings and the interest in the game. And, you know, I argued that NBA fans, more than fans of any other professional sport, they're stuck in the past and that they long for the NBA of their youth versus the yep. game that's right.
I just watched The Last Dance yes. The other day. It came back on. It was on a binge. I was like, yeah, I'll watch a little bit.
So Jerry Brewer, a columnist, a sports columnist for The Washington Post, wrote a really interesting story. And I want to know if you think this has something to do at all with the feelings about the NBA. The headline of the column was, quote, "The American-born NBA superstar is disappearing. Enter Cooper Flagg." And Jerry Brewer writes that the depth of U.S. talent remains untouchable, which is why Team USA has won 5 straight Olympic gold medals. But the hierarchy is changing. It's most noticeable at the MVP level, where the award has gone to foreign-born players, the past 7 years.
Seven. Mm. Now, think about saying that, if like the NBA you grew up on.
Mm-hmm.
Think about saying that, Becca, how preposterous that would have sounded.
Not only that, an American hasn't finished in the top 3 of MVP voting since Steph Curry placed 3rd in 2021.
That's maybe even more telling.
He goes on to write about how the Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Steph Curry generation, they're aging out. And they've lingered on a little bit too long because the supposed next generation, Zion Williamson, Ja Morant, has not panned out, whether because of injuries or off-court issues, what have you. So The point of the article, the column, was that maybe Cooper Flagg is the flag bearer, no pun intended, for that next generation. But I'm wondering if this has any at all to do with why the feelings about the NBA have changed. That although it is an American game, the NBA, as Jerry Brewer writes, the American-born NBA superstar seems to be disappearing.
It's a great question. I think of it more of how is the game being taught. I can remember about 20 years ago now when Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi were aging out, right? Much like Durant and Steph and LeBron are kind of aging out now. And really, there's been a big, big black hole on American men's great tennis players. Whereas the generation before, Agassi, Sampras, McEnroe, Connor, they had a great run. And I think a lot is coming down to how do we teach the game here? How do we develop our next generation? And I think basketball has got some of that. There's never going to be a lack of talent, right? We're going to have the talent. But I think for the first time, because I think I'm curious about the next 5 years and the next 10 years, are we going to see the trend continue? Cooper Flagg is going to be an awesome player. I think he's going to be a star. But I'm curious, year in and year out, what percentage of the stars are going to be non-American born? And someday, when's the next time we're going to lose in the Olympics? They won it last year. It wasn't easy, even though we had a great team. And there's a lot of Steph and Durant and LeBron were still the anchors, right? What's the next wave? And so I look at the AAU game, all of the things that we see. I used to go to basketball camps, and there was a lot more teaching of fundamentals and stuff. I think there's a lot more now. Let's just scrimmage. Let's play games. Baseball is the same way, and I don't think it's right. I think teaching skill development is undertaught, and I think that's where Europeans and other parts of the world, they've caught up. And also the stress injuries, playing one sport, all of these things, the year-round game. I think we need to take a closer look at how we teach basketball to our, in general, but especially our best players.
I'm not sure if it's how they teach the game of basketball, because I think there are enough foreign-born players that come over here at an early age and either go to high school here, go to one of these academies, end up going to college here. So their game develops even more while they're over here playing against this type of competition. So I'm not sure if it's that, because if you look at some of the foot, just look at the footwork of the American players. For instance, take Kyrie Irving, who has probably the best footwork and ball handling skills of anybody in the world.
And Cooper Flagg's new teammate.
That's a guy that's an American-born player. You look at Donovan Mitchell, what he's doing and his ability to get open shots. It's not just all three-pointers. That's skill. So they have guys. But the problem here, it's not that I think that, you know, foreign-born players are better. It's more recent bias. The last couple of champions have all been foreign-born players. If Giannis doesn't win the championship, people are not putting him up there. They're not putting him ahead of LeBron. They're not putting him ahead of Steph. If Jokic doesn't win the championship, they're not putting him ahead of LeBron, Steph, guys like that, even younger guys. So a lot of it is because, rightfully so, they're hell of a players. But what adds to it is that they've won championships. You look at James Harden. James Harden is a prime example of a guy that is probably one of the greatest scorers and shooters in the NBA.
By the way, James Harden, according to Jerry Brewer in this column, the 35-year-old James Harden, the youngest former American MVP in the league, 35 years old.
But you look at him and you look at his skill set. People don't talk about him as much as they should. Why? Because he hadn't won a championship. That's basically what it comes down to. So
and
I'm
there's
not,
criticism of his ability to mesh
exactly,
with his teammates.
Absolutely. So, you know, every player sort of goes through that. You look at Luka Doncic. He's a top five player, but he's steady getting diminished. Why? Because he hadn't won a championship. But he's a foreign-born player. Mm-hmm. I think it's all about not just the skill set, because I think – Once you start talking about top 10, 15 players, their skill set is off the charts anyway. I think it's now about what are you doing to help your team win? How many championships do you have? And how many not necessarily all-star games you've been to, but how many first-team all-NBA teams have you been on?
I feel like, Adam, on your question too about the fan interest, I think for your individual team, I don't think – as a fan, you're sitting there at your house going, I'm only going to go watch my team if they have more American guys. I like how many people, until maybe you were watching one particular day, knew that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is from Canada?
Right.
You may not have even known that if you're a casual fan. I think you're going to root for your team if your team's good, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know if that's it, but I am really curious about the trend, because that's why I go back to what do the next 5 or 10 years
look at a guy like look at a guy like Anthony Edwards. They want him to be the face.
Yeah.
If he wins a championship, no doubt will he be considered the best player in the world.
Yeah.
If he wins a championship.
But look at tennis all these years later. We're going on 20 years mm-hmm. now, at least, since we've had a great American male tennis player, right, who's competing for championships every year. And it has definitely hurt the viewership of tennis, right? Interest level, there's no question.
I'm looking at NBA MVPs. Again, the past, seven mm-hmm. NBA MVPs are foreign-born. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jokic, Embiid, Jokic, Antetokounmpo. James Harden is the last American-born NBA MVP. And then it was all Americans, if my quick research is correct. There was a three-year period between 2005 and 2007 where you had Steve Nash twice, Canadian.
He shouldn't have won it twice. Everybody knows
and
that.
Dirk Nowitzki.
Everybody
and Dirk Nowitzki, German. So between 2008 and 2018, it was all Americans. But since then, it's been foreign-born players. So I know that there are larger, you know, issues with the NBA for a lot of people, but I did wonder, like, is the fact that there isn't that clear, young American star in the NBA, is that making an impact one way or another?
I think there is. He just hadn't won a championship yet. Anthony Edwards. Yeah. I think he's clearly the guy, because they talk about it ad nauseum with him, and
okay,
he doesn't want it.
Let's do a little mini list here, mm-hmm. and maybe we do this. We got to do this quickly. We'll come back to this, but Edwards, mm-hmm. Flagg is going to be a guy everybody watches close. You mentioned a couple in Morant and Zion mm-hmm. that look like they might have.
I hadn't even talked about those two guys.
Yeah, that haven't blossomed. But who else would be the young American up and coming stars? Not the old guard, mm-hmm. right?
I say Cade Cunningham out of with the Pistons.
Right.
Their guard.
Not a household name though.
Not a household name, but he's a hell of a player.
Sure.
Would you throw Tyrese Halliburton in that mix? Although
yeah.
is Kyrie still at the edge of it?
No.
Kyrie's 30.
No. Kyrie's too.
He's too old. He's on that older end.
He's
kind of like he's not LeBron-ish, but he's more like Steph in a sense. Like it's kind of fading out now mm-hmm. as far as how we look at him as top
players. I
will
say this. They don't roll off the tongue, right?
Tatum.
That's the point.
Brown.
How about Darius Garland?
Nah. I love Darius Garland. Yeah.
But not at the – they're not
– but that they don't consider those guys.
We're stretching.
We're talking about as Dan Le Batard used to always talk about, the Oprah crowd.
Jalen Brunson.
Right? The casual sports fan that knows the top players. There's not a lot of – NBA American stars that those fans, that section, can really name.
It's
an issue.
Yeah. 615-737-1025. By the way, if anybody finds a Cooper Flagg jersey or t-shirt on sale, because they're hard to find, I take a size large. 615-737-1025. We will get back into the NHL and the Predators. Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, will join us coming up next. A lot to discuss with Elliot, and we will do so right after this. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063 The Game.